Oh, we're looking forward to this. We have our Pet Chat team in for us today. Dr. David Tabbert, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon and good year. This is actually my first show back.
Yeah, you've been letting the team down,
it's like middle of March. What have I been doing?
Slackness. And Cheryl Shaw, we always have a topic from you, but Broach watch. I can't tell what you've got. You've got a brooch, like a badge.
Oh, that's a bit obvious.
I can see the no parking sign, but with a red slash. But I can't see what it's blocking out.
Okay, it's blocking out a flea. So we're going to be talking about fleas today.
Oh, Cheryl does not have fleas.
No, I do not have fleas.
Well, she's got the badge to prove it. No fleas here.
Right.
Yep.
Does that mean you were like you've had a flea treatment and you?
Oh, come on.
I'm just asking the question.
All good in this department.
Pet Chat continues on 2NURFM 103.7. The gang is here, Dr. David Tabbert and Cheryl Shaw. She is clear of fleas. Her badge suggests so, Cheryl.
I'm pleased about that because those little bloodsuckers, they're terrible things and they really love our pets. But if there's no pets around and you have fleas in your environment, they'll be loving on you too. Fleas are an interesting thing because they don't fly. Even though they're an insect, they just jump. And so dogs are very vulnerable to catching them easily. And if they go to the park, in the backyard, wherever they go, they're likely to come in contact with fleas. Now, it's really important, and for some reason lately, and David, you'd be able to back this up, people don't seem to be compliant with their flea and tick preparation.
Yes.
They're getting a bit, you know, slack.
Yeah, lackadaisical.
But what happens? If a dog comes in contact with a flea, it's going to have an effect on that dog. Now, it could be that the dog just gets bitten, itchy, scratches, and, you know, may all clear up after that, but the dog continues to be uncomfortable. But there's another thing that can really happen because some dogs are super sensitive to flea saliva. So when the flea bites the dog, it actually puts a little bit of saliva into the dog. So as it actually has these really sharp little I can't remember what they're called now, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
Proboscis.
Proboscis, that's it. They have these little proboscis that go in and open up the area for the bite, and then they suck the blood. Now, when they do that, they actually inject a little bit of saliva into the dog, and that saliva is often an allergen for some dogs. So dogs who are hypersensitive can then get what we call flea allergy dermatitis from that saliva. So it's important that we understand when they get something like that, they become insanely itchy. Sometimes they'll scratch the fur off them, they'll get sores, they'll get ulcers, and it really is something that needs to be treated by the veterinarian. And you need to make sure for dogs that they are, if they do have sensitivity, that you're keeping your flea treatment up to date. The other thing with the flea allergy, when dogs chew at themselves when they're chewing or scratching at the fleas, often they ingest the flea itself. Now, when they do that, it actually turns into a parasite in the dog's gut, and that's a flea tapeworm. So sometimes you notice your dog might be scooting along the ground, or you might lift the tail and notice some little segments of, you know, looks like flattened rice. Now, that's the tapeworm, and we need to make sure that those dogs that have had fleas that are being treated for tapeworm as well, and that's a pretty important thing because they're nasty.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So life cycle of the tapeworm, which is a worm of dogs, but it goes into the flea as well. And so without adequate flea control, you're actually now dealing with two problems.
Yes, yes. And if they're not having the flea and tick control, we've got the other problem of the ticks as well. So whilst we're trying to combat the fleas, if we're using a good product, and there are so many wonderful products out there that cover all of the fleas and ticks and the general worms, so it's important. There's, you know, tablets, there's chews, there's top spot applications. But one of the things that we need to remember is we're trying to deal with not just the adult flea itself. There's this stages of fleas, and this is where a lot of people come unstuck. They don't realise, they just think, oh, I've killed the fleas. They might use something like a flea shampoo. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, I've killed the adult fleas, they're gone. But the problem is when they get back home and into their own environment, because there'll be the larvae, the pupae and the eggs still in the environment, which is going to hatch. And the flea shampoo isn't enough to combat those. So that's why we've got to make sure people are using products that are deemed to kill all of those stages or prevent those eggs actually from re-emerging and hatching. And these products are so safe. It's not that, you know, you should be worried about them. Most of these products are really safe. And if you speak to your vet, they'll be able to advise what one is best for you.
Yeah. And Cheryl, it's really interesting because it's a topic that I wanted to pick up today around another parasite, if we get time.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm just thinking back to when I was a kid and we would bath the dog once a week with a Suntol, which you'd mix with water. It came out clear. It was in a tin that had a very, like a skull and crossbones on it.
Yep, it's poison.
Poison. You mix it with water. The water goes all cloudy.
Yep.
And I remember maybe, you know, my dad was being a bit lackadaisical. Us kids would wash the dog with bare hands and pour it over, and it had this really strong chemical odour.
Yeah.
So
and it just permeates the air for so long. They're organophosphates. They're really nasty.
I actually wonder if my parents were trying to get rid of fleas off us now that you say it. But you're absolutely right. Now we have much safer products that are targeted to the nervous system of fleas, of all things, which... That's incredible.
It is. The technology there is great because what actually happens, Mark, the little flea has a seizure and dies, and that's a great thing. But also in some cases.
Unless you're the flea, of course.
We don't want those fleas around.
It's very short-lived.
Yeah. But they're just such horrible little insects. How small they are, but the damage they can do to dogs. You know, you see those dogs that they've chewed at the top of their tail and it's raw and so sore. And I just feel that people need to understand that flea control and tick control is year-round. It's not just, oh, we'll give it a break now.
Yeah.
It really needs to, you know, I can't hone that enough. It needs to be given to the pets all the time.
I think, David, what your mum and dad needed is Cheryl's badge, the no fleas badge, for after you'd been messing around with no gloves.
Yeah,
with the flea treatment.
I think you're right. A badge would have gone down well.
All right, 4921 6216 if you have a question for our Pet Chat team today. Cheryl Shaw is here and Dr. David Tabbert, who finally decided to join us for 2024.
I couldn't miss out on all the fun.
It's midway through March. You've missed a little bit.
True.
Making up for it today, though. To a new RFM. Good afternoon, Alan at Carey Bay. You have a question for the team today. What's going on, Alan?
Yeah, I have a Cabochon dog. She's about 5-6 years old now. And we've took her to the vet once before, and he explained that she had lumps on her back, very small lumps. And he said they were warts, and they were predominant to the breed of dog. And not to worry about them, but they might get bigger. Well, they are getting a little bit bigger, but I'm not sure what the treatment should be for them around now. Can you put cream on them, or is it surgical, or I'm not sure?
So they're generally, thanks, Alan, for calling, but they generally tend to occur in a couple of different forms. So we get these flat ones. So just back step a second. Warts are better otherwise known as papillomas. So they're a viral disease that causes these tumour growths on skin. So they can occur in a number of different forms. So one form you'll get is they're quite flat, but just a little bit raised above the skin in various shapes. And then you get these other ones that are more like pyramid shape or lifting up off the skin, and they're kind of got a bit more keratin in them. And it really, I think it depends on at what level within the layers of skin the actual virus is starting to cause replication. And that's what ultimately causes these warts. And there's a pedunculated one, which kind of grows off the skin itself. Most of the time, the issue with those is just whether they get knocked, they can bleed, they can get infected. They can increase in size in and of themselves, and to the point where they may be causing some problems, particularly if they're over an area that is either accessible to the dog to chew or rub, or they might be on a point that the dog's laying on, and that can cause problems as well. So it's probably best to check in with the vet. As far as surgery is really the only real option. In the past, some people have tried a vaccine, and you might think, well, where do you get a vaccine for this? What they actually do is they take, and I've seen this work with dogs that have got heaps and heaps of these. They cut one of the warts out, and then they're mashed up and suspended in saline, and then we inject that under the skin, and that actually creates an immune response. So the dog's body starts to fight them off. But again, the problem there is if the wart itself is right on the outside layer of the skin, they're actually not going to respond to the something like that, because we just don't have the immune system reaching out that far into the outside layers of the skin. So ultimately, yes, they'll require surgery if they're causing problems. If they're infected, you can use antibiotics and a mixture of antibiotic and steroid cream. That's probably the only treatment, but it doesn't actually treat the wart. It's just treating any inflammation or infection associated with the skin problem.
Yeah, she doesn't have any issues. There's no pain or discomfort. It's just I notice they're getting bigger. They're getting a bit more volcano-y, pimply sort of thing. They're getting higher now. And right. She gets groomed every month, but I know the lady's never cut her yet, but I worry about them grabbing it one day in the shoes or something, just nipping the top right off it or something. So
yeah, I mean, that can happen, isn't it? Cheryl can attest to that.
Yeah, particularly with Bichons, from usually around the age of six, they tend to be very warty. And it is a nightmare for groomers because they do sometimes bump them and they're very prone to bleeding. A lot of the time, if they do get like that, the vets will actually surgically remove them. So, yeah, it's just if they don't seem to cause problems, but they are a nuisance in a way.
Yeah, I was just going to say, though, I have seen dogs where kind of with Alan's story where it's like, well, they're not a problem now, they're not a problem now, and then all of a sudden they're the size of a nectarine on the dog's back and now they're a problem. So, look, there's opportunity to remove them earlier, then that's great, but for a lot of cases it might just be watch and see, and then obviously with the grooming you just want to make sure they're not going to be knocked or damaged.
Best of luck with everything there, Alan. Good afternoon to Grace at Cardiff South. Here you actually, Grace, tying in with Cheryl's topic on fleas today. Your question, Grace.
Yes, I just wondered how often you should actually bathe your dogs, because I thought you shouldn't do it too often because you can cause irritations. So I've just been doing it once a month, but the gentleman, I've forgotten his name. Oh. He just said if you're bathing them every week when he was talking about flea prevention, and I thought, are you supposed to do it that often?
Okay, so with that, you really shouldn't be using flea shampoos. If you're trying to bathe your dog to get rid of fleas, it's not the correct way to go. It's not the preferred option. Using a flea treatment, as in one of the chewables or something like that, is the way to treat fleas. But as far as bathing a dog, when you've got show dogs, sometimes you're bathing them two or three times a week. I bathe my dogs once a week, and providing you're using a good quality shampoo, and I mean it doesn't have to be an expensive shampoo, but a shampoo that's
a good quality.
Yeah, that's designed for bathing dogs, and just making sure that you're using a good product.
Yeah, I think there's two issues here. So one is about flea prevention and treatment, and then the other is about regular bathing. So the flea prevention one, and Cheryl touched on this earlier, a lot of these products that we now use are more in the kind of, the best way to describe them is that they're growth inhibitors. So they will actually prevent the progression of the life cycle of the flea through the pupa and through to the larvae and then the adult. So they do have an effect of killing adult fleas, but they're also blocking the life cycle. And they're given either as a top spot or a oral medication monthly is most commonly, or even 3 monthly with Bravecto, for instance, as a product. So that's your flea control done. Okay. Yeah. But as far as skincare, then I think you need to be judging based on the activity and the coat type and the skin type of the dog. And I'm kind of in the same camp as Cheryl. My dogs get washed once a week. We go to Redhead Beach. They have a big run every Saturday, and then we take them for a wash straight away. So, you know, they don't stink for at least 3 days anyway. Some dogs do better with more frequent washing. Some dogs less frequent.
I give mine their monthly flea thing, and I bath them at the same time, not in flea shampoo, just, ordinary shampoo, not for dogs. But I was going down every week to the dog place to wash them, and someone said, you shouldn't do that every week because it's bad for their skin. You should just do it, 3 weeks maximum. And I said, I do it once a month. So you can bathe them every week then, or as you need.
Yeah.
Yep. And it often keeps their skin in a lot better condition because you can observe what's happening with their skin. You're more aware of what's going on. The coat usually will then expel more dirt. It won't hold, foreign matter because it's being rinsed out or washed out. Yeah. I bathe dogs every week.
I think also, like I said, it's more an individual thing. So there are some dogs that have got a more oily coat. Some dogs have got a thicker coat. Some dogs are shorter and you're brushing them or grooming them. Other dogs, you do need to wash them that frequently to be able to maintain their coat and their skin condition. Some dogs have medical conditions. You know, they may have that flea allergy, dermatitis. They may have allergy to environmental allergens, which is known as atopy. So you might be doing medicated shampoo or at least a maintenance program. And so all of those kind of decisions will influence rather than just a blanket rule of once a week or once a month.
Yeah. If I bathe them, mine don't actually like the hairdryer. So I can't do it in the morning and then they've got all day to dry out. So that's okay because, you know, someone said if you don't get them dried with the hairdryer, you can get sort of like, fungus and things growing on the skin. Is that true?
Yeah, you get a yeast that grows on the dog's skin because of the moisture. So the dog's body's warm, the moisture gets trapped on the skin in the coat, and then yeast just loves to breed in that environment. So it is good if you can, really, really towel them dry and try and then get the dryer on them, play some nice games with them while you dry them. But getting them really dry is the answer to preventing malodor and also problems with the skin with yeasts.
All right. Look, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Grace.
I'll have a crack at yours now. Mary from Maitland, your 14-year-old Kelpie Cross not doing that great, Mary.
No, it's her rear legs that they say, like with the Kelpies, it's a bit of a hereditary thing and they tend to, the muscle breaks down, but she's also spent the last two winters being injected for arthritis in the hips to try and help her mobility and that and the pain. They seem to work, but I've noticed over the last few weeks, now she also gets homegrown turmeric added into her diet. She gets fish oil tablets every night. But I'm just wondering whether she may feel a bit of relief. I know the arthritis is different to the hip displacement, but is there anything else we can do to make her time here a bit more enjoyable?
That's a really good question, Mary, and one that a lot of people have concerns about with their pets, because obviously our pets are living longer and so we're experiencing the problems associated with degenerative joint disease occurring in these older pets. And it's great that you're looking for anything that can be helpful to, as you said, make her time a bit more enjoyable. I think one of the things that you've touched on with the previous treatments that you just outlined is that it is a multifactorial approach. You're actually looking at things like direct pharmaceutical management. You're looking at dietary adjustments and nutraceuticals being added in. I'd also, to some degree, kind of concur with your comment about hereditary, although I think it's not so much Kelpie hereditary, but probably Kelpie behaviour hereditary. Yeah. They're incredibly active dogs. They spend a lifetime just running. And so,
And she has as a younger pup and that. And then, the vet advised us a few years ago, stop throwing things because they pivot and that damages. So we stopped all that. Part of the issue is the fact that she's a rescue from the RSPCA as a pup. So I don't know her background, breeding of the parents and things like that. I'm only going on her as a one-off, So
well,
I just thought maybe there's something more we can do to help her to make her life a bit more.
Yeah. At the moment, you've obviously already started some of these things, so we're going to duplicate it when we go through a little bit of a plan of what we tend to do with dogs that present with signs of arthritis. Couple of things. One is just that getting the diagnosis is very helpful, and you may have already explored this. So in some cases, it's going to be measurement of joints, measurement of muscle mass. You mentioned about a bit of muscle loss over the hips, and the vets will use some tape or a way to measure, the leg might be we're losing muscle mass. That's because they're not using the leg as much because the joint's sore. It's a bit of a marker of what's going on. Obviously, we're also going to consider using X-ray because that can actually show us the changes that are occurring in the joint. Unfortunately, X-ray does not pick up early signs of degenerative joint disease. For that, we need to look at joint fluid itself, and that's not usually something we want to be doing that frequently, particularly for an older dog that has good evidence otherwise that it is simply a degenerative joint disease. And what's actually going on with those joints is, for some reason, there's instability or overwork, as we talked about, and the joint fluid can initially start to increase and stretches the joint. That causes pain. Over time, what we see with these joints is they often lose joint fluid. And so the joint fluid is a lubricant that acts between the two ends of the bone that come together. And the ends of the bone are covered in cartilage, and the loss of joint fluid and just the repeated trauma to those pieces of cartilage means they start to thin down and wear out, and then you get bone-on-bone contact, which is incredibly painful. So the injections that you've had in the past are designed to improve the rebuilding of the cartilage within the joint. And some of those nutraceuticals that you talked about may play some role in that. Fish oil generally, for its use for arthritis, is more associated with inflammation and control of inflammation in the joint. So nevertheless, we want to approach it on a number of levels. Weight control is important because every extra kilo is going to put more strain on joints. The type of exercise, like you mentioned about cutting out, throwing the ball and jumping and things like that, absolutely. And we would encourage people to think about swimming as a way to get your dog to exercise enough, but not putting too much pressure on those joints.
Yeah, look, we were trying a swimming in the lake, but she has too much difficulty when she's trying to come out and all her body is wet and that. The vet's very happy with her weight level. She's sitting on 25 kilos, whatever, right. And he's more than happy with that, or she is. It's more, I know if you run your hand down the actual hind of her leg, once you start getting where I suppose our knee joint would be, it is a bit swollen.
Yep.
It's a little bit warm to the touch, hence we're still continuing with all the fish oil and the turmeric and whatnot.
Yeah. There is some medication that you may not have used. And the first thing is anti-inflammatories like non-steroidals. When you have an acute episode, those for pain relief and for reducing inflammation, they're very helpful. Long-term, there is actually some newer products around. There's a product called Baranta, which is a monoclonal antibody that decreases the development of nerve pain sensation fibers within inflamed joints. So that's probably the most recent treatment that may be worthwhile considering.
All right.
Because, as I said, you've got to hit this on a number of different avenues, and you've already talked about weight, exercise, diet, and so on. But it's probably worth finding out whether she's a candidate that you could use the Baranta for, because that seems to be helping dogs quite dramatically, and maybe a good scenario for you to talk to your vet about.
We're back into it with our pet chat team today. Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabbert, mate, we've had you working hard.
I'm making
for your
up
first
for
one.
It.
Yeah, working hard or hardly working, depending on.
I'm going to get a T-shirt with that.
It's a good one. G'day, Kerry at Foster. Your border collie is running into some problems. What's the story, Kerry?
She is. Thank you, Mark. And hello to Cheryl and yourself and David.
Hello.
G'day. How are you, Kerry?
Hi there. We have a three-year-old border collie, female.
Yep.
And our vet didn't want to de-sexed her she didn't want to do that when we wanted it done, because she started attacking dogs in the dog park. So anyway,
okay, yep.
We spoke to our trainer and she said, get her de-sexed straight away. That's besides the point. So anyway, she urinates, or she was urinating, and she's on propylene.
Yep.
And she's on 0.5 mil each day, and we started cutting that down, and we found out that that didn't work, and she started urinating again when he was lying down. I forgot to give her her 0.5 yesterday morning, and there was urine all through the house. So we're seeing our vet on mid-April because she needs her injections.
Yeah.
Is there a operation she can have, or do we have to live with this?
So she's 3 years old. How long ago was she desexed?
Probably 2 years and a bit.
So she was about just under a year, or?
No, she was over.
She was desexed at 2 years and a bit.
Yeah.
So
it was 2 years.
In the last 12 months. And then how long between desexing before she developed this urinary incontinence?
Probably about 6 months, if that.
Okay. And she's been on the Propylen. Did that work at the 0.5 mils every day?
It did. And then we sometimes have to put her into the kennel because of the other way. And they said, you need to cut it down. So we started to cut it down. We got to about 3.5, and then she started urinating again, just laying down.
Okay. And then you said you missed a dose yesterday, and then so there's urine through the house last night.
Not even last night. It was almost instantaneous.
Okay. I mean, I was just trying. The reason I ask is that I was trying to work out when are these instances of incontinence occurring, whether it's occurring during the day and she's awake, which means it's actually not a hormonal responsive condition, or is it just when she lays down? Some dogs will do this if they're just quietly resting versus fully asleep. So I'm just wondering if there is, you know, are these areas that she's resting or sleeping where she's had these episodes?
Well, yesterday it was all in the dark.
Oh, okay. It was at night.
No.
All in the day. Sorry, I missed that.
It was all in the day. And okay. Last night we gave it the 0.5.
Yeah.
And there was no urine in the house.
Okay. So it may be that she's just been resting and it's occurring. So going back to your original question, is there a surgery or something, some other treatment? There are some dogs that respond better to the propylene, but what we used to do before that drug came along was we used a drug called Stilbestrol, and
right.
I have seen a number of dogs that have actually, they do better on Stilbestrol. Now, there are some side effects with Stilbestrol, and it's not great long-term, but there's plenty of dogs that are on it long-term. You just need closer management with your vet. And that's probably the other way to go if the propylene isn't working as well. Having said that, though, I would just keep using it. I don't know why you want to reduce it if it's stopping the problem. I don't think there's a problem with long-term use of it. Maybe cost, but...
No, the cost is not a problem. It was just the lady in the kennel where we bought her said, if you can cut it down, cut it down.
Yeah, I just keep using it. I wouldn't want to reduce it. The thing is, using that more frequently, if the alternative is Stilbestrol, you're going to have more problems using Stilbestrol on balance. I'm not saying it would cause problems, but on balance. So I would keep using the Propylen at the appropriate dose. And the other part is there surgery? There is, but I've got to tell you, it's specialist surgery and it's not going to work in most cases, in a lot of cases. So you're probably not at a point where we'd want to use that. Most of these dogs will improve or at least be managed with long-term medication.
All right, best of luck with everything there, Kerry. Gang, we've pretty much run out of time, but we'll try and do our dog and cat of the week in 20 seconds each. Basil, 6-month-old Beagle Cross Cavalier. Thoughts on that type of breed?
Cute.
Yep, very.
I said he looks like a purebred Beagle, but I can buy the Cavalier, so yeah.
They look like some model shots too, don't they? Kudos to whoever took that first one. If you head up on a website, you'll see. And a cat of the week, lovely little grey and white Nala. She looks gorgeous too.
She is beautiful.
She's 2 years old.
I say she, I'm assuming that's a she.
Yes.
I think so, yep. Yeah. She, her. Yep. All right, that's our dog and cat of the week. If you'd like to expand your family, you can head up to our website, the Pet Chat page at 2NURFM.com.au. Cheryl, thank you for your efforts as always.
My pleasure.
And David, pleasure to see you a little bit later than normal for 2024.
Oh, back at it. Love it.
All right, another Pet Chat on the way next Wednesday from 12.